Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
Welcome to Think. I'm Alan Melson. Chris Boyd is on vacation. Our guests this hour come to us from D Magazine. We have Zach Crane, writer and senior editor, and Peter Simic, arts editor for D Magazine and dmagazine.com. The magazine's January cover story is entitled 20 for 2011, The People and Ideas That Will Shape the Year in Dallas. And in that article, they make a variety of predictions about what stories will matter to the city over the coming year. Zach and Peter, welcome to Think.
Thanks for having us.
All right. So first of all, how did this story come together?
Well, we were sitting thinking about the new year, and I guess at the time when we were coming up with the January ideas, it was on the heels of the TED conference and a few other things, and so there were a lot of these ideas up in the air, and we wanted a chance to write about them, and it seemed like the best way to kick off the year was to actually sort of get as many of those things in as possible, sort of like, I guess, kind of like in a, you know, that's when you make resolutions and things like that, so kind of kick it off with something inspiring and kind of pushing us forward.
And there's 20 of these predictions in there, and they come from different contributors. Did you all sit around a big table and figure out, you know, what you were going to cover, or what were your criteria for picking these different items?
Well, we did a little bit of that. We sent it out to a lot of our contributors. We sat in a room, like literally sat in a room, and kind of came up with things and came up with more than we needed, and then just try to winnow that down to the things we thought were the most essential. You know, Pete had a lot of hand in a lot of these, and just you can see from his byline. And
I think the idea was that they weren't merely empty predictions, but actually had some facts to back them up. So it's stuff that will probably very likely happen. So it was more of a reporting thing than just your usual prediction type thing, looking forward to the future, which I think was part of the criteria for winnowing down all those different options.
Yeah, we didn't want anything that was like completely just, you know, it, not something that, you know, just we hope would happen or we maybe think will happen. I mean, we made calls on pretty much everything in here. I mean, there was a fair amount of extrapolation and a little bit of guesswork, but for the most part, it, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if all 20 happened.
Wow. Okay. And you talked to some experts in, you know, the particular field. So it's you've got good facts in there, good research to back it up. Well, let's go ahead and delve into the some of the stuff you cover in the article. I figure, you know, we can start out with some of the more city related items. And number two on your list is who is going to be mayor going forward. You predict that Tom Leppert may not stick around past this term. What's the story behind that?
Well, that's something that actually surprised us, because when we started coming up with these ideas, that was one of the first things we wanted to do is, Tom Leppert will be mayor because of this, or Angela Hunt will be mayor because of this. Those were the two ones that we sort of, those are the two lead dogs in this. And when Tim Rogers, the editor of the magazine and the one who wrote that piece, he started making calls, and this scenario started coming up, and started making sense. And actually, Ron Natinsky's name came up, and that was something that it caused a problem, like internally, because our art director got mad at us because we had never mentioned Ron Natinsky. We kept talking about Angela Hunt and Tom Leppert, and he had good art for that. And then all of a sudden, he had to find a picture of Ron Natinsky.
And I think a lot of listeners may say, who? I mean, you know, he has city council experience, but he's not a name that's been in the media a lot.
Exactly. And
yeah, I mean, I remember back, I used to cover City Hall for People newspapers right when he got elected. And you could almost see some of those ambitions kind of filtering through different things he's been involved with over the years. And one of the big things is whenever there's any sort of economic development mission abroad, he's leading the way. And so he's a real close ally of Leppert on the council, and he's kind of established that camp of support. So that's not as surprising as you might think if you're kind of watching it.
So what do you think is going to happen with Mayor Leppert?
I think he still is bound for a higher office of some sort. I still think he has his eyes on the Senate at some point. It just never seemed like he was going to stay around for, you know, be one of those mayors that you just think of as, you know, he's here forever. I think he's just always, based on the things that he's done while in office, I mean, this sort of are laying the stepping stones for campaign commercials, essentially, you know.
And the question, I think the logic in the piece in the magazine is, what does he have to gain from another term, and does he have more to gain from trying to look for another office and try to make that step?
Another thing that gets a lot of coverage, both locally and nationally, is the economy. And you continue to hear horror stories coming out of other cities who are still kind of trying to climb out of the recession. But Dallas has not had a lot of those same issues. The North Texas area hasn't had the same number of foreclosures. It hasn't had the same percentage of job losses. And in this particular article, you talked to the chief economist for Comerica Bank, Dana Johnson, and he predicts that that economic growth will just continue here in the area. Why is that?
I think part of it is the income tax, and part of it's just, I mean, that's we're just like a can-do city, I guess. I don't know. It always seems like the economic things happen to us later, and we pull out of them faster. Mm-hmm. And this time is especially that, you know, it's especially been like that. We were probably the last hit with that, and it's hit us, I wouldn't say not as bad as anywhere else.
And Dallas, I guess this area here has been traditionally pretty business friendly, corporate friendly. And have you heard of any other, you know, companies that continue to talk about relocating here, or companies that have expanded their presence here in the last year or so?
Well, I mean, that's one of the main things that Mayor Leppert has been trying to do. I mean, mm-hmm. I just saw something yesterday about I think it was a company in the Northwest that's like it's Columbia Sportswear, and I mean, he made a move for them, which is kind of like, that's sort of insane if you think about it, but it just shows that, you know, we've got our arms open to just about anybody. He sends out his little iPads or iPhones to everyone that are personalized with all the information about how great it is to be in Dallas.
Well, just what struck me interesting about Dana Johnson's piece, and it's something you forget living here, is that the cost of living and the cost of doing business is so much lower in this part of the country than it is anywhere else. So when you're in a time of recession and people are looking to cut costs, it's almost an opportunity for Dallas to then reach out to more people and say, well, this is one way to save money, is to move down here because there's a more business-friendly tax environment, and the cost of living is so much less.
And there's been any number of pieces in the Dallas Morning News and elsewhere about the quote-unquote rebirth of downtown. Where do you think that'll go in 2011?
Yeah, I mean, there's one thing that we touch on is the new parks opening up. So that's mm-hmm. kind of the big, from an urban angle, one of the big pushes is the Woodall Rogers towards the end of the year, and the Belo Park, which is between Main and Elm, are planned to be there. And then Main Street Garden and all has been a great sort of boon for people living down there. And it's a well-used park, which surprised me, actually. I didn't think it was going to be as well-used as it actually is. And so there's hope that there's a little bit of activity. The question is, you know, what density is needed to make it actually a viable neighborhood and to support retail, which is still what's not there. I mean, there's Neiman's and that's about it. And with the situation of being stuck in a ring of highways, how do you overcome that? So I think it's going to be a little bit of more of the same if I had to make a prediction on that one.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, 2010 was a lot about putting a lot of pieces in place. I think 2011 will be that too. And then, you know, I think in 2012 and 13 and so on, then you can kind of see how all this ties together. We've been there since D Magazine moved its offices there in the end of 2009. And since then, I mean, you can see it like just basically like every week, just a little bit more of more people and more energy and more things happening. And there still isn't like this sort of umbrella that ties everything together yet. But you can feel that it's really close to happening.
Our guests today are Zach Crane and Peter Simic from D Magazine, talking about their January cover story. What they think the big stories will be in the North Texas area in 2011. You can join the conversation now by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending an email to think@kera.org. Now let's talk about, you mentioned some of the parks that are coming downtown. Let's talk about one of the things you mentioned, I think it was number 20 on your list, is Dallas going outside. More and more opportunities for people to get out and enjoy the city. And you mentioned the Woodall Rogers Deck Park and the gardens that are happening downtown. Can you talk about kind of where things stand with the development of that?
Well, the park, the Woodall Rogers Park, we can see it from our windows, and it's still quite a ways away, but it's they're just about have Woodall Rogers covered as far as the beams they need to get there. But so, you know, it's to that point where it looks like it should be going faster than it is, but it's going to take all of next year. But it's going to be you know, it's going to be fantastic. I mean, it's something that like literally ties uptown to downtown and just a gigantic green space. I can't think of it. I mean, we're probably building the biggest urban park in, you know, outside of like Central Park right now.
And the Trinity Project is something we get asked about here pretty often because there's been tons of coverage about it, but there hasn't been a whole lot of palpable development beyond the Calatrava Bridge. And you list the Calatrava Bridge as a hot ticket, the opening of the bridge in late 2011. What do you think that'll bring to that area, and do you think a lot of the other planned stuff will ever get built?
Well, the one thing the Calatrava Bridge will do is open up Continental Bridge for some sort of pedestrian parkish area. That's sort of been the thing that they've been planning for that. So I guess it opens that and it gives another reason to be down there. I think the Trinity, the problem is there's no real gathering force down there that you actually want to go to see. So there are trails, but they're hard to notice. And I think it sounds like there's going to be more of an effort to promote the trails. And if you've been up in the design district area, the Lower Oak Lawn, as they're calling it, there's plans to have the trails connect up there, and I think if that can all get done, you know, there'll be a little bit of movement on the Trinity thing. But I guess the big thing is the Whitewater Rafting Park that's being planned for that area, right? Aren't they going to open that up next year?
Yeah, they're going to open that up next year, and that will be. I mean, I think that's one of the things everybody's been pointing toward because there isn't. I mean, the stuff they have open so far is. I mean, the Trinity, the Audubon Center is amazing, but I don't think enough people know about it. I think this is going to be one of those signature things, one of those things that was in the drawing for so many years when they were talking about the Trinity project that will finally, you know, come off the drawing and be something you can actually do, and it's probably the first thing. And so now it's like something that everybody can point toward and, you know, finally plant the flag on this actually happening after, you know, three mayors and, you know, a couple decades.
Now the Audubon Center is sort of southwest or southeast of downtown, kind of off Interstate 20. Where is this Whitewater Rafting Park going to be?
I believe it's right south of the Santa Fe Trestle. I think near where the Dart Line crosses,
like
over
pretty
there.
Close to downtown.
Yeah, it's much closer. It's part of that main sort of area. I think it's just south of where the sort of main floodplains are when you cross over it.
And finally, you talk about Jason Roberts, who's become quite a renaissance man down in the Oak Cliff area. He's very active with Bike Friendly Oak Cliff, and he has this Better Block project. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I mean, it started, I want to say, in 2009 they threw the first one, which was a fairly ingenious idea. I mean, the problem with Dallas from an urban perspective and thinking about in terms of walkability and building, you know, denser neighborhoods and all that stuff is part of it is just the attrition of a car culture. But part of it, there are a ton of laws on the books that were developed in the 60s, 70s, 80s that are outdated in terms of how you want to live in a city today. I think one of those was just the permitting process for having food on the streets or the laws regarding having cafe tables outside of things where, well, hey, we would like to sit outside and eat a dinner, but a lot of people don't know you can't. So the neat thing about Jason's project is that he said, well, rather than fighting things or promoting things or going to city council and doing all this, everyone knows what the city that they'd like to live in looks like. You can picture it. So why not let's go out and create that, even for a fleeting moment, the picture of the city, and use that as a way to grab attention and show how simple when you're working outside of the context of the legal parameters, you can simply just make it happen. And so that he's done a two or three at this point. Now I think he's taken it full time as an actual business that he's trying to start to promote these things both in Dallas and around the country.
We're speaking with Zach Crane and Peter Simic from D Magazine about their cover story, 20 for 2011, The People and Ideas That Will Shape the Year in Dallas. You can join our conversation now by calling 1-800-933-5372 or emailing think@kera.org. After the break, we'll be talking more about arts and culture and food and much more, so don't go anywhere.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults. Short courses in the arts, writing, languages, history, and communication start weekly in January. Details at smu.edu/think.
Welcome back to Think. I'm Alan Melson in for Chris Boyd. We're talking today about what the big stories will possibly be in North Texas in 2011 with our guests Zach Crane and Peter Simic from D Magazine. And now I'd like to delve a little bit into sort of the arts and culture scene. One of the things you mentioned in your list is the AT&T Performing Arts Center. They had, continued their sort of grand opening stretch of events during 2010, but they ran into some issues with fundraising and the economic downturn and some criticism of the programming at their venues. What do you think they'll do in 2011 to turn that around?
Well, it's the whole story of the Performing Arts Center is interesting because for much of its existence, really its existence until about a year ago, it was a fundraising entity. They were just trying to raise the money to build the buildings. And I think the real kind of tough transition was saying, well, we're no longer a group that's simply trying to raise a lot of money or construct some buildings. We're actually a programming organization. And so that took some transition in terms of rethinking what the role is and figuring out just exactly what needs to be in place to make that happen. Part of that is financially. During the whole period of raising money to build the buildings, there wasn't much, if any, money raised for either an annual fund or an endowment or things like that. So that's sort of where their attention is now from an executive level is, well, we need to raise the money to be able to, operate the center. They expected losses for the first few years. There have been losses. They've been a little greater than they expected. But from what I hear, that doesn't have to do with attendance. It more has to do with some of the details of how they're financing construction and debt and that kind of thing. So from a financial standpoint, the word is things are going well. The big thing last year that happened was Mark Nierenhausen, the CEO, left fairly abruptly. And there's lots of speculation as to why that happened. But that's sort of the big thing that needs to happen in 2011 is to put that head back there. Doug Curtis is the interim CEO, has stepped in for a while, and he's doing a fairly good job. But there are a few key positions, which is kind of the piece in the magazine is focusing on that they're actually planning on putting together. One, obviously, is the CEO. The second is to hire a development officer just to develop, spend full time raising money for the center. And then the third is a programming person, because right now they are relying on a lot of outside programmers to put all the different things that they have going on together. It's interesting, the center itself, it's hard to figure out exactly what events are Performing Arts Center things, what events are things that happen from the organizations that rent out space or that are the resident organizations and things like that. So they realized, I think, during this first operating year, well, we actually need someone who's sort of overseeing the calendar and knows what's going on here or there and can kind of make all that happen and fit together. So I think those are positive things. I think that they're thinking about it in the right way.
Now, how does that work as far as the kind of the division of labor with scheduling? I know you've got the opera, who I guess is sort of the main tenant in the Winspear, and then the Dallas Theater Center, who's the main tenant in the Wiley Theater. And then does the Performing Arts Center organization as a whole have to schedule around them, or how do they balance
in short,
that?
Yes. And okay. Those are the main sort of resident companies, as mm-hmm. well as Dallas Black Dance Theater. And so they have to move around the opera schedule. And that is particularly problematic when it comes to booking the Broadway series that they're doing there. And I think in 2011, you can kind of see that the first year of Broadway shows at the Performing Arts Center was quite good, and they brought in some challenging stuff. Next year, it's a little softer. And I think it's hard to launch too much criticism at them because they are working with the opera, and the opera is taking up, especially now that they're in repertoire programming and they're doing a lot more stuff, they take up some key weeks in the calendar. So just managing all that is a challenge for them.
Now, next door to the Performing Arts Center complex in the Meyerson, they have, their primary tenant is the Dallas Symphony. And you mentioned the symphony, number one on your list, with their prominence, and with Jaap van Zweden, the conductor, in demand as a guest conductor elsewhere, and a trip to Carnegie Hall in New York in 2011, and a European tour coming up in a few years. Do you think that they're sort of going to cement themselves as an ambassador for the city?
It's hard to tell. I think the thing is that they haven't been that ambassador yet, and they haven't been really seen as an orchestra with Van Zweden outside of Dallas, really except for their summer residency in Vail, Colorado. So this spring they're traveling to Carnegie Hall, and it really represents the first time they are going out. I mean, Van Zweden's made headlines in L.A. and Chicago and abroad, of course, but no one's actually heard the symphony under them. So that's kind of the prediction, but also the hope that this will be the stage that gets them where they can finally get attention of some other cities and say, okay, Vince Wadin is making that orchestra sound a lot better than it ever has.
And do you think he'll stick around?
Well, he signed his contract, says he'll stick around. And
contracts will do that.
But they usually do that, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a few positive signs that show that he is committed. One, I believe this, he took a he just donated a bunch of money to the symphony's mm-hmm. capital financing campaign. I think he took a pay cut in order to help with musician salaries. He has a home at the Ritz-Carlton. But I think one of the real indicators, at least, is his daughter, Anna Sophia von Sweden, is everywhere in the social circle. So she seems to be enjoying herself. That means the family's happy. Hopefully that means he doesn't go anywhere.
Okay. Now, one bold statement that you make as part of the article is mentioning that a New York kind of creative think tank called Creative Time will, quote, show the Dallas art community the way. What do you mean by that?
Well, the Creative Time received the Meadows Prize in 2010, and that is what used to be the Meadows Award. This is one of the really cool stories in Dallas. SMU's Meadows School of the Arts is really kind of rethinking how they work. And they took the Meadows Prize, which used to just award it to a famous actor and bring them in and have a fundraising dinner and that type of thing. But now they've almost used it to create a mini residency program where they take some really well-known people. Eighth Blackbird is a music group, a contemporary classical music group that they brought in along with Creative Time this year to kind of have them work with students and also create something in partnership with different organizations in the city. Creative Time is a very respected, innovative arts collective out of New York. They're the ones who did the Twin Towers Memorial, which are those two beams of light shooting up into the sky. And they were basically told to come in and kind of look at what the arts ecosystem in Dallas looks like and what kind of recommendations they have for making it work better. And their report's going to come out in January. And I think it'll have an impact just because it's already had an impact. It's already created dialogues within the community that weren't happening. And it's helping people kind of take charge and command of the scene. So it's really interesting to see happen.
And the organizations here in town seem to be receptive to you know, someone coming in from outside and saying, you know, we like what you're doing, but you could do it better.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people who are involved in some of these local fights are happy to have someone say, hey, we need a serious, internationally respected arts residency program at one of our universities. So that's something that a lot of people have been trying to do that can take two fundraisers, can take two universities and say, listen, we can make this happen. And there are a few different things like that they're going to be suggesting.
Okay. Let's talk about a name that some of our listeners may be familiar with, Sarah Jaffe. A year ago, she had gotten some great local press. She was the first in-studio performer we had here at our sister station, KXT 91.7. She got mentioned on NPR and in Rolling Stone. But it was kind of a local phenomenon. In the past year, that seems to have really changed. Her visibility has grown. She's had some really key opening slots for some tours around the country. What do you think 2011 means for her?
I think she's definitely poised to really build on that. I mean, I think a lot of the things, a lot of the attention has been in the last couple of months. The record came out in her first album, Suburban Nature. It came out in May. And I mean, I think as she's toured around and kind of built on the beginning part of the year, a lot of these things are showing up now. I mean, she's on tons of year-end lists and kind of really high on a lot of them. She's really poised to really, 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 really make a name for herself in 2011. I think she's probably going to continue what she's been doing, which is, you know, prime opening slots for bigger artists and just keep touring. She's got an EP of songs that I mentioned in the article. She wasn't sure if she was going to put them out, but she put them out digitally in, I think, January. And she probably will have another record probably by the end of 2012, and you know, I think she'll cross over from these smaller things that she's been doing into the mainstream in some form or fashion. I mean, you could definitely hear her song on a you know, TV show or a commercial, or you know how those things happen.
Well, that's good to hear that she's you know, she's sort of poised, and so it'll be interesting to see if all that really happens for her. But she definitely has the potential and has the audience now to really.
And she's really ambitious, also. Mm-hmm.
All right. We are speaking with Zach Crane and Peter Simic from D Magazine. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending an email to think@kera.org. We're going to go to the phones now, and we'd like to speak with Zad in Dallas. Zad, welcome to Think.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Just wanted to, first of all, great topic, great show.
Thanks.
I wanted to push the listenership out to two websites. The first one is downtowndallas.org, which would speak to, I believe it was Zach's comment about the umbrella still needing to form downtown. Great comment. That is the master plan. The 360 plan is explained there, and the citizens that read this can see how that near-term and long-term vision is unfolding. downtowndallas.org. And the second one is artspace.org. Artspace.org, that's on the topic we're on right now. That is, there's also a great process underway to bring that national provider of affordable art housing along with, they do mixed use with performing art, not-for-profit use, residences for established artists, et cetera. There's just a great intersection there. So those two websites will be great for people out there, and that's all I got.
Okay, thank you very much for your call, Zad. Now we'd like to go to Reagan in Dallas. Hello, Reagan. Welcome to Think.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Question is, I want to get your guest thoughts on Uptown and its role and its expansion in the coming years and how it's going to play out in downtown. And I'll take my answer off here.
Okay, thanks for the question.
Well, I mean, that speaks directly to the Woodall and in terms of can you make that bridge across the highway. Uptown has many things obviously going for it that downtown don't. One of it is it's a little more free in terms of spatial. It has the economy there, and the density has been growing over a long period of time. And some of that was put into place back when it looked like it was in a similar state of downtown. And the State Thomas and the PIDs and things that were put into place there to really help that development go. It seems like it's kind of trucking along.
Yeah, I mean, it's Uptown has always it's kind of always been doing better since always been doing better than downtown. And I think
you see more people out and about, mm-hmm. especially McKinney Avenue and
it's
and
kind
West
of got
Village.
That natural advantage just because it's got more things that people it's not office buildings and it is a little bit of that, but it's more fun things to do. And yeah, I think the park is going to be that nice bridge between Uptown and the Arts District and downtown. And, I think everything will flow together and it won't be as segmented as it is now. I mean, you either go to one or the other and so on.
And going back to the Woodall Rogers Park for a minute, in the rendering that you have in the magazine, there's a stage and a crowd in front of the stage. Is that all actually going to happen? Do they have the financing in place to build a sort of an outdoor performing venue there?
That's a wonderful question. I'd have to go back and look at exactly where the different phases are. I know there's three or four phases with the park, and maybe a listener could actually help out. The one thing I know that some of the amenities that aren't funded at this point are some of the public art things they want to do. In terms of the amphitheater, I want to say, but it's probably speculation that yes, that part is funded, but I'd have to look back into that. Back along the lines of the park, I think, and this idea of Uptown, there's some interesting. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, because when you think spatially about how the transition works now between Uptown and Downtown, everyone for a long time has been building away from the highway. And so you have a situation both south of it in the Arts District where you have the Nasher and the DMA are built so that you don't want to go to the highway. And you have north of the highway, you have even some of these new developments where there may be some potential spec retail right on the highway. But when you'd start talking about Olive Street and St. Paul Street, those streets are just very long and there's nothing there but blank wall space or maybe some dumpsters and stuff. So I think in terms of Uptown and its relation to downtown, that's going to be the challenge, is figuring out how to make that a more of a pedestrian connection, where right now I walk that a lot and it's kind of a trudge. I don't know how many people are going to organically flow between those two spaces. That'll be kind of one of the things to look for.
Which is just like getting people into the mindset of actually walking places. And,
right.
It's funny because in Dallas, no one walks really anywhere in where.
Especially between May and September.
Yeah. If you're in New York, you have no problem walking 2 or 3 miles or whatever. And here you wouldn't walk 10 blocks, you know, to do something simple. And so I think it's, you know, a lot of the things now are all about retraining people's mindsets about how to use public spaces, not just to have them, but just how to experience them. And, you know, we have, you know, there's more public transportation coming through in the next few years with streetcars and things like that. And I think you'll start to see people, you know, like almost literally change, because they'll start walking more and doing more things like that. And I think, having the Woodall Rogers Park there is a big key, because I was, you know, it's like a moat between one part of the town and another. And I think it just kind of separates us. And that'll be a good excuse to actually have to walk from somewhere in uptown to somewhere in downtown.
And talking about walking, you also mentioned Deep Ellum and the fact that after a really bad decade of businesses and crowds sort of fleeing the area, there's life coming back into Deep Ellum. What do you think will happen with that in 2011?
Well, I mean, I think Elm Street is pretty well populated now with LaGrange and Black Swan and a few other of different places. That one stretch of Elm, I think it's going to start, you know, hopefully spreading to Maine and to Commerce.
And trees reopened. And the
trees reopened, and green room. And, you know, it's getting back to more some of the quirky businesses like Bucks Burnett's. 8-Track Museum is coming in down there. A lot of what happened at Deep Ellum was sort of self-inflicted. You know, they raised the rents and they pushed mm-hmm. people out of there. And they, you know, a lot of things were just really alienating about, you know, from the people who used to go down there all the time. I mean, it's expensive to park, and they push you to the corners of, they push you to the corners where it's dark, and like people get nervous and scared, and then like they had bad PR, and they never really did much to correct that, and it became a wasteland. But it's good to see life down there for a change after God so many years.
And there is a situation where I think the slow economy is actually a benefit, because you may see some of those landlords not thinking they can flip their properties for mixed use developments anymore, and you might actually. Stability there because of the downturn, which is positive.
Our guests today are Zach Crane and Peter Simic from D Magazine, talking about the magazine's January cover story, 20 for 2011, The People and Ideas That Will Shape the Year in Dallas. You can put in your 2 cents now. You can call 1-800-933-5372 or send us an email to think@kera.org. We will have more on this topic right after the break.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults. Short courses in the arts, writing, languages, history, and communication start weekly in January. Details at smu.edu/think.
Welcome back to Think. I'm Alan Melson, in for Chris Boyd. We're talking today about some of the hot stories that may come our way here in the North Texas area in 2011 with Zach Crane and Peter Simic from D Magazine. And we have a question that came in from email that says, how will Dallas continue to have venues taken away from it, like, say, the Cotton Bowl or, in a sense, the Cowboys? And how could Dallas recover from that, given what some perceptions are of vision and leadership among city leadership and the city council?
That's tough. I mean, the problem with something like the Cowboys is that's a generational change. You don't really get that opportunity very often. Another one that irks me personally is the FC Dallas moving to Frisco. I mean, that's something you're just not going to get back to the Cotton Bowl anytime soon. The trick there is that Dallas as a city is competing with some of these satellite cities that have so many different economic development tools at their disposal that Dallas doesn't have. So Frisco in particular, they don't put their tax into DART. They put it into an economic development fund and can lure things like the Stars practice facility and the soccer team, as well as other things out there. And then Arlington, you know, kind of bet the house on the Cowboys working out. So Jerry Jones, it's a business deal at the end of the day, and the city doesn't make it easy. Mm-hmm. It has some stiff competition.
I think the good news is we've lost everything we pretty much can.
Right, true. Yeah. You know,
but I can see us, I've heard some talk about, and it helps that they got to the World Series, but people trying to get a you know, another Ranger Stadium back in somewhere in the downtown area. I mean, which is, I guess, the original plan was it was going to be near a farmer's market. But I think I've heard plenty of chatter about, you know, trying to figure out, you know, because it's by the time they built a stadium, it's not like out of the realm of possibility that, you know, it's the ballpark at Arlington would be pretty old by that point. I mean, in terms of like the new life cycle of stadiums, which is, you know,
yeah, it seems like the ballpark just opened, yet it's been, what, 16, 17 years now?
Something like that.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility that when the ballpark's 20 years old, you could see the Rangers in Dallas. So I don't know. I mean, but yeah, I don't think anybody's coming after the Mavericks or Stars.
Right. Okay, we're going to take a call now from Nancy in Dallas. Nancy, welcome to Think.
Hi, I had turned my loudspeaker off. can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. I had a question and a comment. Having come from a background where strolling from one venue to another in the spring and the summer evenings was part of the joy in New York City, I miss that a lot here. And when you were talking about the upper uptown area and going back and forth to the downtown area, didn't McKinney Avenue used to have a trolley on it?
It still does, actually.
And they're updating it eventually in the plans, and they're extending it down, so it's going to meet up with DART.
Aha. Uh-huh. So it would go across the park or
Park? It currently goes through where the park is. It's going to still do that. I think they're suspending service. I want to say it's 11 or 12 because they're going to build the tracks up Ross, I want to say, and then down Pearl so that it hooks up with the Pearl Street DART station. So they're actually plans to expand that, which will be good. It'll offer a lot more connectivity and kind of make that bridge between uptown and downtown more manageable for walkers.
Okay, Nancy, thanks for your call. We'd also like to take a call now from Robert in DeSoto. Robert, welcome to Think.
Yes, I was just wondering if they were going to try and tie the Deep Ellum with maybe the Cotton Bowl or do something like on the green.
You mean like for a concert event?
City limits.
Okay, so you're talking about from a concert perspective.
Yeah, to be able to draw on the local entertainment and tie it with, say, the parks and the Cotton Bowl and American Airlines to take and put on TV.
Oh, okay. So that's an interesting question, like maybe some sort of larger event, like a Texas Jam kind of thing that would bring in lots of artists, or maybe the Crossroads Festival that we had a few years ago with Eric Clapton. Do you see anything like that happening?
The only thing remotely close to that, an idea that's been bouncing around for about a year, speaking with Valletta Lil and also a local artist in town named Shane Pennington, is to try to create an event that imitates what other cities have. They're called White Night events. Montreal or Toronto has a big one. Rome used to have one. Paris has one, in which businesses stay open all night and people kind of go from place to place. And there's a lot of public art and public performances. And I was in Rome in 2003 for theirs, and there's theater, Shakespeare on the street and that kind of stuff. And so there's some people in the Arts District and people in the community are talking about that. And that's precisely the area they're talking about, is somehow linking Fair Park and the Arts District and maybe the Cedars neighborhood, because you're now with the Green Line opened, you do have a way to go from Fair Park to, say, American Airlines Center to Pearl Street, which isn't too far away from the Performing Arts Center, to the Cedars area just south of downtown. So those kinds of events where you can teach people, like Zach was saying before, how to move between different parts of the city, I think could be really useful in kind of making the city feel more cohesive and more pedestrian friendly, because you can get around and there are things to go to on foot. You just kind of have to get used to it, because you're not walking down a New York street anymore. You're walking sometimes across a parking lot. If you can kind of ignore that.
Or a freeway.
Right, or a freeway. Yeah. Take getting off at Park Lane and going to North Park, which is something I do fairly often, to go to movie screenings there is semi-frustrating. But after a few dozen times, you forget that you're almost getting run over every time you try to get over there.
Yeah, and I'd rather see something more along those lines than, you know, necessarily trying to emulate Austin again. You know, I feel like a lot of times we have this sort of chip on our shoulder, at least like in a way, culturally, because they have all the music stuff down there. They have ACL and they have South by Southwest and they have all these other things. They sort of have the market cornered on that. And I think a lot of times people think that we have to compete on that front, which I really don't think we do. I mean, we get enough spillover. I'd rather see us push these like arts events in a different sort of way and not just rely on, you know, rock and things like that.
I think that's something that we forget about within the Austin comparison is Austin has a fantastic music scene. We have a fantastic music scene that's either 40 minutes north of where you live or closer than that if you talk about Denton. But in terms of visual art and in terms of drama, I mean, there really isn't any comparison. I mean, the strides the city has made in the last few years are pretty remarkable. So definitely embracing that and mixing it all through
and trying
to make it all feed off each other is a great idea.
Our guests are Peter Simic and Zach Crane from D Magazine, talking about stories and trends to watch in 2011 in Dallas. And right now, let's talk about food. You talk about on the list, number 10, a big prediction that Tex-Mex will lose ground to regional Mexican cuisine. For those that are unfamiliar, what is regional Mexican cuisine?
It's not enchiladas and, right. and hard shell tacos. The word mole came up, I think, in our food editor Nancy Nichols' article.
And this is probably the boldest statement we made in all 20 of these.
And just we could because... probably say we disagree with it entirely and save ourselves.
Yeah, it's not what you would think. I mean, I think regional Mexican cuisine is much more like, you know, it's not things wrapped in tortillas as much as, and it's not chips and salsa. And it's a lot of these things it's not or why it's had a bit of a struggle here.
It's more complex.
It's more complex. And it's a lot more acquired tastes. You know, it's not easy as much as Tex-Mex is. It's not yellow cheese and things like that. So, I mean, it's been tried a little bit over the years, you know, Ciudad and a few other things. But, you know, it was a bold statement when Nancy made it. But I believe she knows what she's talking about, and so I do think you'll see that more. I think as you know, foodie culture, Dallas is a little bit more ready for the kind of things that that regional Mexican cuisine brings rather than Tex-Mex.
Going to something a little bit lower price point, listeners who have been to cities like New York or L.A. or Chicago or even Austin may be familiar with the concept of food trucks, moving restaurants. They go around. They go to where the people are. They have, you know, street food. And you predict that Dallasites will start seeing more of those here in the coming year. Why is that?
Well, one major reason is that the city council is getting wise to their appeal and they've relaxed some of the restrictions and things like that. One example was in the Arts District in particular, which is where there's an event at the end of October, capping off their Arts in October, where they brought in a lot of food trucks. There was a law on the books there that said you could only have, I think, 9 permits for food, you know, street food vendor carts.
9 total.
And I don't know where that 9 number came from. It's 9 or 12 or 13. It was something very ridiculous and obscure. And basically, they were all occupied by elote stands that flock around the cathedral on Sundays. So it's one of those rules that makes no sense. Why that number? Why that many? Especially when you start thinking about something like the Arts District or some of these other pedestrian things we're talking about, where there isn't retail space there that can support a full-time restaurant. So food trucks can kind of fill in that way. So I know Valletta Lil with the Arts District is pushing hard to change some of that, and I think that's feeding into why it's there's going to be more of it.
And then there's going to be the food truck court on Lower Greenville and one of the empty lots they have now. And so
is that where the Arcadia Theater used to be?
I believe so. And that's, you know, that's a perfect place for that. I mean, you know, you've seen it in Austin. Like any time there's like an area of bars or music venues, I mean, that's kind of a perfect thing to go hand in hand with that. And yeah, I mean, I think that's like just a gigantic signal that we're finally getting wise to like what to just go with stuff that makes a city run. You know, if it's I really don't see the bad, you know, there's things like food trucks where it's like it's hard to see the downside of putting up so many roadblocks to getting these things to happen.
It doesn't have to be big and expensive to be successful.
Exactly. And, you know, there's a lot of times where it's just like, you know, when it comes to something like that, you talk about, you know, it's like 4 meetings down the line or like, and then it's just like you lose so much steam and then it's kind of like, I don't know, what's the point? So it's good to see that they're like really pushing forward with this.
You make a brief mention of the Super Bowl, which will be here in weeks, coming in February to Cowboy Stadium in Arlington. It's going to bring some attention to North Texas. You kind of make a joke that you know, writers on the coasts will draw more attention to Dallas, but it won't change their opinion at all. Do you think having the Super Bowl here will have any kind of lasting legacy over the rest of the year?
I don't. just personally, I don't see how it does. And actually, to look at what Dana Johnson talks about in his piece, he makes the point that when you talk economically about what a large event like that does, it doesn't even really move the needle in terms of the larger economy. Certainly, it's nice to have national news stories, and there are certain things like particularly of interest for me is the art that has been put into Cowboys Stadium. It'll be that kind of thing in a national story. It does bring a different light to Dallas, though of course it could be construed to be
right.
However they want it. So I don't know. I'm sure we'll get a lot of cowboy boots and Stockyards B-reels and all that kind of stuff. I don't see how it really changes. It's more, I think, small things and long-term things that are a gradual
right.
vision
well,
changer.
I was going to say that I think some of the effects you'll see are things that you wouldn't have necessarily thought about, like just infrastructure-wise. I mean, I was on 30 the other day going to Fort Worth to check out the museums out there and coming back, and I was using the HOV lane they've built specifically for, you know, they essentially built for the Super Bowl, and it's amazing. It makes that trip go so fast. And so I think it's little things like that we'll benefit from. But, you know, I think like we mentioned in the article, Super Bowl is not really going to affect anybody's opinion of, I mean, if anything, it's going to sort of, you know, the writers here who come here, they will hopefully get to see the great new, you know, arts venues we have and things like that. But mostly it's going to sort of reinforce a negative opinion of Dallas, of just the gigantic cowboy stadium. And, you know, I'm sure like the natural thing is going to be to show people with big hair and the cowboy boots and everything like that and sort of.
And you can take bets on how many of them will use the phrase, everything's bigger in Texas.
Yeah, everything's bigger in Texas, which is probably my least favorite phrase
right.
in the world. And that sort of thing is probably going to, you know, negatively impact us. Like people, you know, you go outside of Texas and people go, oh, yeah, you're from Dallas, where, you know, it's just going to be like a continuation of Dallas, the TV show, unfortunately. I hope not. But I mean, I feel like, you know, I think in a lot of senses, you go to the lowest common denominator, and that's what it is. It's somebody with a giant cowboy hat saying yeehaw, and, you know, or hopefully they'd see a little bit more of that.
Now, in the last minute or so here, you make a prediction that a new store coming to North Park Center, H&M, will change your life. What is H&M, and why will it change lives?
Well, Pete's the fashion
expert. That's outside of my
pay
grade.
H&M is it's in New York, and it's in a lot of other bigger cities. It's sort of like high fashion for lower cost. Certain designers have their own collections there. I think Stella McCartney had something there, and it's something that, like, I guess is one of those sort of signifiers that, you know, like, hey, we're a player now, you know, that, and like getting In-N-Out Burger or things like that. And which is, sometimes it's silly to get excited about some things like that, but in other senses, it's just like, all right, well, we've got all those things now, so, you know, there's no excuses. But I mean, it's something that, like, in terms of shopping, I think that's going to really impact the city.
Great. Our guests today have been Zach Crane and Peter Simic from D Magazine, talking about the magazine's January cover story, 20 for 2011, The People and Ideas That Will Shape the Year in Dallas. You can find that story online at dmagazine.com or on newsstands all across town. My name is Alan Melson. Thank you for joining us today. Have a great day.
Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.